Chapter the 17th. But as I knelt beside her, Cecily gave a little sigh, blinked, opened her eyes, and as her gaze fixed on my face, joyous amazement dawned. With greatest wonder she whispered, "Enola?" How strangely it affected me to hear her say my true name in that way. Gripped by emotion, I could neither move nor speak. "Enola?" Her hands faltered towards me. "You again? Can it be?" "Shh!" A touch made me want to weep, but I quite needed to function. Forcing myself into action, I fumbled in my pockets for the strengthening candies I always carried with me, unwrapping one and giving it to her. She placed it in her mouth and, galvanized, I think, more by my presence than by sugar, sat up to find me pulling off her shoes. "We are going to disguise you," I told her softly but with clear emphasis, "so that you can escape. Agreed?" "Agreed? By all means, my mysterious friend." Springing to her feet, Cecily began to claw at her diabolical skirt to get it off. The confounded thing fastened in back, of course, as did her blouse. One of the requisites of upper-class clothing is that one should not be able to dress oneself without the assistance of a servant. After I had torn open her buttons, she sloughed off her outer garments, letting them puddle on the floor as I ran for the bundle I had left beneath the bridal gown. The bundle of garments, including a coarse leather pair of boots, that had been offered to Peggy the afternoon before. "We are going to make an orphan of you." "Indeed, I might as well be one." Still, Cecily's thin face lit up when she saw the things. She did not look nearly so much like Alice in Wonderland when she was glad, and she snatched at them. As I, also, was in a tremendous hurry to undo the bundle and get the garments onto her, it became exceedingly difficult to accomplish simple tasks. Cecily and I kept getting in each other's way. Moreover, I had things to tell her. "You remember Mr. Sherlock Holmes?" Joyously she responded, "Your brother!" "Heavens!" She took my breath away. "I hope you have not told anyone." "Of course not. Did you tell anyone about my charcoal drawings?" The question was rhetorical. She knew I had not. Trying to hide my smile, I hurried on. "Your mother has retained Mr. Holmes on your behalf. She has gone to stay with her family in the country. He will take you to her. Confound these stockings!" It seemed to be taking an eternity for us to dress her in the brown smock and brown gingham pinafore, thick zebra-striped stockings and sensible ugly boots. But in actuality it must have been only a very few minutes, for no one had yet returned as I tried to tuck her hair under her white ruffled cap. Long, glossy, thick, slithery hair, it kept getting away from me. "This will not do," I whispered, growing a bit wrought, aware of moments ticking away. "How are you going to pass as an orphan with such accursedly lovely hair?" "Just cut it off. We haven't the time." Yet I grabbed scissors out of the bandbox, small things meant for snipping ribbon they would have to do, and started hacking off her shining locks at the level of her ears. No sooner had I begun than we both heard footsteps pounding towards us up the attic stairs. Cecily startled like a deer. "Hold still." Rigid, she did so, but started to say, "Enola, thank you for—" "Shh! Make no sound," I whispered, frantically cutting off long tresses of hair and stowing them in my pockets for lack of any other place to hide them. Someone, probably Jenkins, tried the doorknob, then cried, "It's locked!" Yet, as is the case with most people, she continued to agitate the knob as if somehow she could thus release the bolt. "Get out of my way!" commanded either the Baroness or the Viscountess. They both sounded the same. "You nitwit! She tricked you!" A series of thumps ensued, as if someone had actually pushed the unfortunate Jenkins down the stairs. At the same time, the fierce voice exhorted, "Cecily!" That shout made the girl flinch. I felt her jump. "Shh!" I whispered, still snipping my way from one ear around the back of her neck to the other. "Pull your front hair down over your face." As she did so, the knob rattled anew. "Cecily, open this door and let us in!" shrieked one of the sisters. "Open up at once!" screeched the other. They continued thus in counterpoint. "Cecily, ungrateful brat! Open this door or I will punish you severely!" etc. After a brief time, however, the tenor of their tune changed. "There must be another key," one of them declared. "Jenkins, go find it!" Oh dear, but I was nearly ready. "There," I whispered, scissoring a thick swath across Cecily's forehead. finished. Once more I popped the cap on her head, and a dear little orphan she made indeed, standing a foot shorter than I, in over-large shoes and clothing too big for her, as if she were expected to grow into it. Her shorn hair, especially the thatch hiding her forehead, made her nearly unrecognisable as Cecily Alastair. Splendid! She could not answer my smile. Her huge eyes remained terrified as they fixed on me for salvation. But Enola, now what? How indeed to effect her escape with the enemy's voices clamouring directly outside the attic? "Bring men to knock the door down," shrilled an aunt. "And be quick," screeched the other. "Yes, m'lady, yes, m'lady," Jenkins' voice faded below. Cecily bit her lip as if to keep from sobbing. "Trust me," I told her, scooting over to where the wedding gown hung. Ripping off its sheet as I snatched it down off its hanger, I plopped it onto myself. I would not have thought it possible for Cecily's eyes to stretch any farther, but widen yet more they did, and her rosebud mouth formed an O. "To give you time," I whispered. "Here." Burrowing under the gown to the pocket of my muslin dress, I found the pink paper fan, on which I had pencilled as a contingency, lest all else fail, 221B Baker Street. I instructed Lady Cecily, "Hide behind the door. When they have all come in, slip out. Go to the gate, show this," I handed her the fan, "and Mr. Holmes, or one of his friends, should be waiting for you." Meanwhile, footsteps pounded up the attic stairs again. "Here's an extra key, my lady," cried a shaky voice outside. There was no time to fasten the myriad pearl buttons running up the wedding gown's back. I had just a moment to seize the headdress and plop it into place on myself, covering my face with layers of cloudy veil, as I threw myself into the chair in which Cecily had been sitting. The key snicked in the lock. So long as I slouched in the chair, mostly buried in mounds of wedding gown, they would not see how tall I was. Their suspicions would not be aroused, so I hoped, as I hid my stocking feet under yards of white skirt and my hands in my lap, pinning folds of veil between my fingers. "Cecily!" stormed two harridan voices in unison as the door slammed open. Then, similarly in chorus but quite changed in tone, "Cecily!" Through my milky thickness of veil I could not make out their expressions, the two dowagers and the cowed servant, as they walked in and formed a semicircle, staring at me. "She's put her gown on," one of them said in wondering tones. I could only dimly see them, and behind them a little orphan girl tiptoeing out of the room to slip down the stairs. In order to keep attention firmly upon myself whilst Cecily made her escape, I began to rock my upper body to and fro in an interestingly demented manner. "Cecily, stop it! Why have you put your dress on by yourself? You've got it all crooked. Stand up!" Instead, I feigned a sort of spasm. "Stop that grotesque twitching, Cecily! What's the matter with you? Let me see you." One of them tried to lift my veil. She could not, of course, as I was holding it down. I tried to assess how far the real Cecily might have got by now. Downstairs, surely, and possibly out the door, crossing the yard. "Cecily, let go of that veil!" One of the sisters tried to wrest it from me. "Don't, Otelia, you'll tear it, and that's the finest tulle in London. You make her let go, then." "Cecily!" Aquila grasped me bruisingly by both upper arms. "Do as she says!" Instead, I began to thrash in a truly pitiful manner. "Cecily!" Both of them grasped me by the shoulders, shaking me, to my satisfaction. Let them maul me all they liked. The only difficulty was to remain stubbornly silent while they abused me, so as not to let my voice give me away. The longer they belaboured me, the better, giving the real Cecily time to escape. But they were interrupted. "What's the matter with her?" roared a male voice, unmistakably that of the Baron. Both Baroness and Viscountess squeaked in well-bred shock at such a masculine invasion, turning on him. "Dagobert Bramwell!" squawked presumably Aquila. "What are you doing here?" Heaven help me, both of them. Yes, through my veil I could make out two looming forms in fancy dress.
"Jenkins said we needed to break down the door," replied the Baron. "Is Cecily misbehaving?"
"I think she's gone quite mad. It was quite simple for me, in my terror of the Baron, to act the part of a lunatic, recommencing to rock to and fro in my chair, but this time allowing myself a number of pathetic moans. The Baroness continued, "First she fainted, or pretended to, and then she locked us out, and now she's gone and rucked her gown all over herself. Just look at her! Nod, nod, nodding like a—" Abruptly, the Baroness of Maganza stopped, and when she spoke on, it was in the tone of one who has taken command in a crisis. "Jenkins, fetch the vicar up here." "Yes, m'lady," I heard the hapless servant scamper away. "Bramwell, come stand beside your bride." "What are you talking about, mother?" whined that toad-like individual. "Do as I say. Don't you see the state she's in? And she'll only get worse. Do you think we want to carry her down to the chapel? No, ceremony can go hang. We must get you married to her here and now."